Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
I think all of us, including the fans, want to win a damn football game.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad.
It's like holding two handfuls of Jell-O.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I want Jason to get it done.
It is amazing how much things could change in a week.
Every decision that I make over the next month will be with an eye in mind to get us in the Super Bowl now.
Talk's cheap, right? I say hell with the talking.
And I would normally say you're really smoking something. I normally would say that, but I know the room.
This is it, man. This is what your grandchildren are going to be smoking.
Nobody's got the exclusive skills to get the job done so that collectively you can win a Super Bowl. But they're qualified people. Jason Garrett is one of them.
I love him. I love him for the man he wants to be, and I love him for the man that he almost is.
In my opinion, Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year.
Well, I don't know about you, Bobby, but when I listen to Jerry Jones over the last week talk about Jason Garrett, it reminds me a little bit of being a 35-year-old woman. Now, so when I said, I don't know if you can identify with this, you're not.
Can't. Nope.
But stay with me here. When you get to a certain age, I'm 39, Bobby.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking about age a lot today.
I know. You're having mortality issues. When you get to a certain age, Jerry, of course, at 77, so yep. Here's where my analogy comes into play.
Okay.
As a woman, you start to realize, well, maybe I'm not going to date the sexiest guy in the room. Maybe he's not going to be the most spontaneous guy in the room. But this guy, Jason Garrett, checks a lot of boxes off for me.
He's safe.
He's dependable. He's got a great college education. He's got a good job. He's never going to cheat on me. He brings me flowers every single year for my birthday. He remembers anniversaries. He remembers those special moments.
He does.
And we've got Thursday date night at Olive Garden. He always gets me breadsticks. And I've enjoyed a sexy, spontaneous, passionate relationship with a man like Jimmy. Man, our fights are explosive. In fact, I probably took some of that trauma from that relationship into my new relationships. And while there was all these fireworks, man, I finally got my power back. I know who I am. I got my mojo back. Do I want to give that to someone like a Sean Payton out there when it just took me so long to get over Jimmy? But everyone since then has been so vanilla. But at least I can say Jason's one of the good ones. Now, I go home to my parents every year and I say, I'm done with him. He's not going to get me the ring that I want. We just continue to date. I'm not getting the ring that I want, but he's a good guy. I don't know if I want to get on Match.com and swipe right just yet.
Are we still talking about Garrett? You're seeming to get really personal here, Jay.
I have a lot of friends that talk to me about their relationships, Bobby. I'm coming from surveying all my friends, of course.
Of course.
But that's what it feels like when I listen to Jerry talk about Jason. It feels like a man who's settling, but there's been explosive news here on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
The Carolina Panthers have come out and they fired a guy like Ron Rivera, who, by the way, did not have his franchise quarterback.
Nope.
He's a coach who made the playoffs four of the past six seasons, coach of the year twice in that stretch, made it to the Super Bowl, and fired.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a couple of ways we can look at that firing as it relates to the Cowboys.
It's they're not in a totally dissimilar position. I mean, they obviously haven't lost their quarterback. But you remember that? See, that's the funny thing to me. He loses his quarterback. He gets fired. Jason Garrett loses his quarterback. That's the excuse that he gets to keep his job after going 4-12.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's funny, though, that, you know, Ron Rivera, we've pointed to this before, that if you look across the league, there is one guy that's a lame duck head coach right now. That's Jason Garrett. Everybody else had at least an extra year, their contract running through 2020. Typically, when you get to the last year of a deal, like Jason was, teams will either fire or extend at that point. And so Ron Rivera was going to be one of the three coaches in the league who expired next year. So it was fire, extend time. They chose fire. Those are always good coaches to look at, the guys who are heading into a final year as potential options if you do move on. And those three, Anthony Lynn with the Chargers, a guy who has been in this building before, was the running backs coach for the Cowboys years ago. Ron Rivera, a guy who was interviewed the last time you did a coaching search and you hired Wade Phillips. And the other one is Mike Zimmer. He has 1 year left after the season where he'll get fired or extended likely. And all three of those, it's just interesting the timing as those three are starting to come up. Those are all three guys who have ties to this building.
But look at the way that Mike Zimmer's playing, his team is playing for him up in Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, this is they're a playoff contending team right now. You know, maybe Anthony Lynn. I don't know if
Lynn would be the
right. I don't know if Jerry looks at him the way that he would. Again, Sean Payton was the guy that this organization coveted. That make no secret about that.
That was in your analogy. That was the girl you loved in high school who got away.
Yes, got away.
Or the guy you loved in high school.
Yes, that got away.
Yes.
But that's why I continue to say this whole thing with Ron Rivera is fascinating to me because while he didn't have the relationship with management, obviously, with this new owner that Jason has had with Jerry. I mean, we keep talking about the fact that Jerry truly wants Jason to succeed because he's his creation. I feel like he's got years invested. We talk about girls that stick around with guys for a long time. Well,
not just an investment. There's a definite familial bond there for Jerry. Yeah, Jerry views Jason as family.
You've invested time and energy, and sometimes you don't want to go out there and test the waters because you got to start all over.
Scary.
And when we start talking about other teams in this league, I don't know if Freddie Kitchens is safe in Cleveland.
Don't believe
Pat Shurmur doesn't look like he's safe.
Doesn't look like Dan Quinn
with the Giants.
The
Dan Quinn in Atlanta. So you've got the Carolina Panthers that are now getting an early jump on this thing. And when I look at last year, sort of like musical chairs, the Cowboys, when they were furious after that Rams loss, and I know on good authority that the Cowboys were sort of, I won't say doing an official coaching search, but we'll just say that they were sort of looking under a few rocks to I'll put that delicately. They were looking under a few rocks without getting into too many details.
Okay.
They were sort of not stuck necessarily, but they felt like Jason was the best guy still standing. And I feel like if you're going to truly move on from Jason Garrett, then I think the argument could be made, then you should just go ahead, name a guy like Rod Marinelli, your interim head coach, and get an early jump because I do believe that you're going to have other guys out here.
Go ahead and declare that the job is available.
Right, because there are some sexy jobs that are opening. I think the Giants' job is the most intriguing. And don't for a second think that maybe Jason Garrett and his agent don't go test the waters. And if you don't think that Jason Garrett is an interesting candidate from other teams for other teams, you're kidding yourself.
No, we've said before, I think Jason would be a really attractive option in Washington where there's so much instability and it's who can we find that'll work with this crazy owner.
I completely forgot about Washington. That's another team.
Yeah, and, you know, Cleveland, if Freddie Kitchens gets fired, that's a job where people go, wow, there's a lot of young talent there. You know, maybe it's kind of a mess, but I can make something out of the mess. He is. Yeah, he's from the Ohio area. He spent time with the Giants. You know, there are going to be options out there, I'm sure.
But my point is if the Cowboys aren't careful, they're going to be left standing with a guy that is not the sexiest candidate and the guy that made sense, that was reliable, that was dependable, a guy who at least got you into the playoffs consistently. May not have won him. You may not have gone deep. You still get butts in the seat. You still got a locker room that buys in. You're going to lose that candidate.
Isn't that so unlike Jerry, though? I mean, maybe not because we've seen
unlike
it for some
him.
Years.
He's been doing it for 9 years.
But that's what I mean, though, is historically, hasn't that been, not necessarily in this little snapshot we have, but historically, hasn't that been so unlike Jerry to just, well, you know, I'm just going to, this, I know what I have here, safe play here. I mean, that's just so unlike him when you hear him talk about business dealings and the way he approaches
things.
Yes,
that's what I think is the craziest thing about it.
And so it's, I think they're reaching point. I know I said this at the end of the last podcast where we were both so exhausted and hoping it was just a dream that Jerry had talked the way he did after the game, but
he had tears in his eyes, Bobby.
Gosh, I'm so
I was standing right in front of him, and I literally—if you could have seen my expression this whole time.
Oh, I was getting ready to enter locker, and I had a clear shot of your befuddled face.
I had the hardest time buying this, but I'm back to where I was before. I don't know if I believe that his seat is that hot. I still believe this thing's lukewarm. And if this team goes and gets a few wins and they get into the playoffs, which it's looking like they are since the Eagles have decided to go and lose to the Dolphins, I could see Jerry legitimately hanging on to Jason. And here's where it's going to get crazy. Jason's price tag's going to go up because some of these other teams are going to want him. And Jerry's going to be afraid of losing his girl.
No, I don't like this picture you're painting, I'll be honest. But here's the thing that's interesting. You know, we talked about this a little bit on the podcast, and I know we talked about it standing outside the locker before Jerry came down. We all anticipated angry Jerry after the game, right, against the Bills. We all anticipated he was going
to
come out.
And never pretend to know what Jerry's thinking,
of course,
Bobby.
Of course never. Not. Never pretend. But that was the expectation. He was going to come out. He was going to continue the same line.
Because how can you defend it?
Right.
So that's my point. How can you defend keeping Jason another season? Jerry's going to find a way to do it.
The only person, apparently, as I was walking out of the stadium at, you know, 1 a.m. or whatever time it was. It wasn't that late, but it was late. And as I'm walking out, I saw a blue truck flash headlights at me and stick their head out and say, "Be better at your job." And I looked, and it was our friend Brian Broaddus.
Who, by the way, we'll have on our next podcast.
Yes, we will. He's going to join us. And
formerly of DallasCowboys.com.
Brian was there, and we just talked for a second. I said, you know, I'm really surprised. I thought we were going to get angry Jerry out here. And he smiled. He said, no. He said, we were walking down. I was with Ari Temkin. Ari and Brian do the post-game show for the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. And he said, Ari was saying, you know, oh, he's going to be furious tonight. And Brian says, nope. He said, what do you mean, no? And Brian said, we are going to get gentler Jerry Jones tonight, I promise. He said, we've already seen angry Jerry Jones. Jerry's going to come out there exasperated and exhausted because it didn't work. And I think you're going to see a reflective. And he hit it. He hit it on the head. That was exactly what we got. And because of that, because Brian's perspective was right, that he came out there like that, I got to feel like he's just in the acceptance phase of this is, I'm losing a family
because
member.
Let me go back to the relationship analogy. A girl can say to a guy and threaten time and time again, I want the ring, I want the ring, I want the ring. She dresses sexier, she looks hotter, or she gets angry and she ices him out, she's cold. She's not getting the response that she's looking for. You know what typically I've seen?
What?
What turns a man is when she is gone and he sees her on the arm of another man, and then all of a sudden his instincts kick in and he's like, now wait a minute, somebody else wants what I've got.
So how do we play out that analogy?
Jason Garrett's agent starts floating that he's a legitimate candidate for the Carolina job, mm-hmm. for the New York job, and for the Cleveland job. Because you heard Jerry even say, well, I could see him coaching in the NFL. He didn't say coaching with another team or coaching with the Dallas Cowboys. That's Jerry keeping the door out. He's playing now.
Here's also what he said. He said, in my opinion, Jason will be coaching next year, which also does not lend to certainty that he's going to be here.
Also says that he's capable of winning a Super Bowl. He's got all the skills required to win a Super Bowl. Aren't you looking for that in your head coaching candidate?
Yeah, but I mean, as our friend Mike Fisher from 105 Through the Fan has labeled Jerry is Jerry Poppins. You're going to get 2 spoonfuls of sugar with that lie he's going to sell you sometimes.
But I continue to go back to this. Show me a better candidate right now that's out there. Proven winner. Unless Sean Payton was out there on the open market.
Let's talk about two. Ron Rivera. Is that a better candidate than Jason Garrett? That is a guy who has been to a Super Bowl.
He has been to a Super Bowl. But I believe it is a very similar type of coach in terms of who he is as a person. My girlfriend, Tiffany Blackman, covers the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have better things to say about Ron Rivera. Great guy. I know his players love him. But has he won a Super Bowl?
As a player, he did, at least.
Okay. Has he won a Super Bowl? Is that not the ultimate goal?
Sure, but I mean,
I already went down his resume.
We're looking at a legacy now that's devoid of even NFC Championship game appearances, though. I mean,
and you're bringing in a whole new coaching staff, and you're hoping that you're not only going to just go to the postseason. Jerry wants a win now mentality. Now, I will argue that I think the NFC South is a lot harder than the NFC East. When you look at some of the teams, when you've got the Saints, the Falcons,
our favorite note today we were talking about is. The Redskins are currently third in the draft, which means they have the third worst record in the NFL, and they still have not been eliminated from the NFC East title.
And the NFC East has been the NFC least.
If the Redskins win out and the Cowboys and Eagles lose out, the Redskins win the division. Not likely, but You know, it's at least fun to kick around. But
okay, so we'll kick around Ron Rivera. That's an interesting candidate. Do I think he's the fix? Do I think he gets you a Super Bowl in the next 2 years? Let's be clear. Jerry's expectation is a Super Bowl in the next 2 years.
Yeah, and I think anybody you're bringing in is to push a group over.
And I think what keeps Jerry Jones up at night is he feels like Jason gets him close every single year. And we've seen these new coaching camps. We've already talked about we've talked about Matt Nagy in Chicago, Adam Gase with the Jets, Cliff Kingsbury with the Arizona Cardinals, Brian Flores with the Miami Dolphins. Just because there's been coaching changes doesn't mean that we've seen a sweeping difference in some of these teams.
No.
You saw it with Sean McVay in his first year.
And you've seen it, though, this year, as you know, we talked about this with Dave Hellman a few weeks back. Dave pointed this out. Potentially the best example of like what would a change look like in Dallas may be what has happened in Green Bay. A long tenured coach who over time it's just like he's not going to done anymore. And then you bring in a fresh voice, a young hotshot coach first time, and they come in there and they're, you know, they've found success again.
So that's not Ron Rivera, who's my young, sexy new coach that we've got out there.
But if you're looking for a palatable change for Jerry, a coach like Jason Garrett, Ron Rivera, just on the defensive side, bringing in defensive Jason Garrett. That's not attractive.
Does he bring North Turner with him?
I don't. I mean, the Cowboys may want that. I don't know that you'd want to go to North Turner. I don't think Kellen Moore and John Kitten have been the issue.
All right, but here's the other thing that we've heard and what I've been told around here.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever the next coach is, they want to keep certain personnel in place. Is a seasoned coach who has a history in the league, who has a few skins on the wall, is he going to want to come in and do it all Jerry's way? Is he going to want to retain some of Jerry's personnel or Jason Garrett's, a former coach's personnel?
I would guess that if that's the case, that whoever's being brought in is not necessarily going to have, if it's not Jason, that whoever's being brought in, it's going to have to be a college coach.
All right, so now it's not Ron Rivera. So now are we talking Lincoln Riley? Lincoln Riley going to get you this done in 2 years?
No. Well, see, now here's the other issue.
Because what's Lincoln done at Oklahoma?
Well, here's the other interesting issue here.
Has he gotten you a national championship yet?
I would imagine the coaches you would want to carry over, let's just, not knowing who they are, let's think logically about what coaches they'd want. I would imagine it's largely on the offensive side. Mark Colombo's done a good job. I think they've been really happy with him since he took over for Paul Alexander. Kitten has been great. I think they like Sanjay Lal a lot. I think what we're talking about is probably they want to just keep their offensive staff intact. And if that's the case, you're probably not bringing in an offensive coach and telling them to swallow the assistants. You're probably saying, don't worry about this side of the ball. We got it handled. That to me says they're bringing in a defensive coach if they're bringing in somebody to replace Jason Garrett. And that wouldn't be Lincoln Riley. We kicked this around a little bit. I'd love your take on this. We got four head coaching types, generally, four head coaching type hires. Occasionally you'll be Rod Marinelli and you get hired as a defensive line coach to all of a sudden be the head coach of the Lions. But typically you've got the college coach is one. You've got the internal promotion. So you just elevate one of your coaches on staff.
And that's not happening in Dallas.
I don't believe so. No, you've got the retread head coach, somebody who's been a head coach elsewhere, maybe had success and retired or didn't have success and was fired, whatever. Just somebody who's been a head coach before. And then the hotshot coordinator. Generally, it's going to be one of those four. I got to feel like if they're asking a coach to take staff already in place, that sounds like a college coach to me. Somebody who's not necessarily going to have the relationships at the NFL level to fill out a whole staff anyway, that it'd be easier for them to accept those sort of stipulations. And so you start looking at college coaches who are a little more defensive minded. Is that not been in college for a while? Is that Stoops? Is that Bob Stoops who you tell to come in here and accept the offense?
Stoops is intriguing to me just because obviously he's got the moxie, he's got the experience, he's got skins on the wall. I think he's a fiery personality who would be interesting here in Dallas, obviously knows the area well.
Which of those four is most likely to you, though, do you think? Do you think they're going to want a retread head coach, somebody who's done it before? Or do you think they'd go college?
I am not sold that they're making a change, Bobby.
That's the thing. I think when I lay it out like that,
when I lay it out there,
she goes, oh, it's Jason.
Because when I lay it all out, I keep going. When he talks about the pros and cons list that he has, he to me is no different than a girl that is trying to figure out, is she going to move on from the guy that won't give her a ring, or is she going to stay with him? Because we just got so much history.
But I mean,
and I've been on Match.com, and it's scary out there. And I've been on a couple of really crappy dates. Well, and at the end of the day, he's just such a nice guy.
Also, at the end of the day, don't you also...
Maybe what I want is unrealistic.
But also, at the end of the day, don't you dump the guy who gets you close but can't finish. Just saying.
The whole thing is just so absurd. The reason why it's so absurd is because I think the fans were literally Team Jerry for the first time since he's been in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has been ugly for Jerry in Dallas over the years. My sweet grandmother growing up, everything that could go wrong, bad weather, Jerry Jones's problem.
Oh, like, you have
her roof needs fixing, Jerry Jones's problem.
They will not, there are people to this day that will not forgive him for Tom Landry.
100%.
They never will.
But last
there are
week,
Tom Landry players who will never
but
forgive
last
him.
Week, I felt like he literally had public sentiment behind him. And then after the game, he lost it all again.
Do you think that just felt too weird to him? He's like, geez, I've never had this kind of like connected. This is awkward position for me. I'm going to go back to this. This is just too weird to have this sort of, you know, unanimous support for me right now.
It's whiplash. You know, if you're going to set a mandate, you want to go ahead and just keep that stove turned up, because then it's almost like the message isn't well received. It's like, okay, sure, you're going to leave me. Fine.
Oh, yeah. No, it's grounding your kid and then you let it go. And then they're not going to, okay, I'm grounded again. Okay, whatever you say.
It was such an emotional, I have PTSD after it last week.
Can you recall, and I'm going to have to go look and see if there's ever been a team in existence like this, where your head coach and your starting quarterback don't have contracts heading into the offseason?
It is pretty wild.
The inability seemingly to make decisions on the biggest pieces that they have here is wild. And that kind of makes me wonder if Jerry and Steven recognize how short this window is. And so they recognize the importance of each of these decisions. And so they're just trying to put them off as long as they can and gather as much as they can. I'm floored that you've got your star receiver, your star corner. I mean, if they didn't have, let's say Byron Jones went down with an injury right now, are they stopping anybody in the secondary? No Anthony Brown, no Byron Jones.
No.
And you're heading into an offseason where he's likely gone, I think. You have nothing at corner, which means you're probably going to be rolling out a rookie starter next year at corner. Or some veteran that you're not going to be able to spend a ton on because you're having to pay your receiver and pay your quarterback. You're going to have a bargain bin corner out there. The way they've put off some of these decisions is kind of surprising. And yet the only one they've taken care of realistically is the one who didn't need to be taken care of for two more years because you had that control of him.
It was as if they did a contract because they got scared, like with Zeke. They didn't want to envision a life without him because that's just how high the optimism and expectations were for this year.
I think that's a great point. I think they thought this was the window.
This was the year.
And so they needed him here. And I think if you ask them today, would they have done it at that time again?
Not a
chance.
They would say no. Specifically, Steven Jones would have told you, not a chance, in my opinion. I don't know that for a fact, but I feel like this team was doing a pretty good job of saying we're holding out. And unfortunately, you look at DeMarcus Lawrence's contract, you look at Ezekiel Elliott's contract, and it doesn't bode well for paying Dak what he wants now.
Right.
And that's what's unfortunate because...
Or you just have to get really creative in the way you cap juggle.
And I think what's a little unfair about this is... We were talking about this earlier today before we recorded this podcast. Dak is one of the cheapest, most valuable players you've got on this team.
Oh, yeah.
One of the cheapest, most valuable players in the league.
Yeah. I mean, people talk all the time that if you look at generally the teams that win Super Bowls are teams with elite quarterbacks or you're a very good quarterback who's cheap.
Russell Wilson before he got his big contract.
Russell Wilson during the contract, you know, when he was cheap and they were able to stack talent and pay people and they won a Super Bowl before they had to pay him, you've blown that. Time's up on Dak. And I think that...
And as I reported this week, it looks like this thing is headed towards a franchise tag, which is fascinating to me. And I don't think it has anything to do with they don't believe that Dak is the guy of the future. I don't believe they think that Dak isn't their franchise guy. I don't know what more you could want from a fourth-round pick in Dak Prescott. When you look at this career season that he's had, and then when I think about the things that he's done off the field and in that locker room, that's a guy to me that you throw money at. But it's gotten contentious with I'm being told, between his agent and the Cowboys, based on the years that he wants and the number that he wants. And the Cowboys are exercising their ability right now to use that franchise tag. And then again, they have the transition tag if they need to use it on Amari Cooper.
This actually recalls a really good clip that I think we can actually play real quick that I think is relevant when you talk about the contentiousness that exists between the Cowboys and Todd France. We are going to France. France actually told this story a few years back about how he got Fletcher Cox's deal. Listen to this.
Fletcher Cox was a really long process. It was only basically 2 years. We turned down deals. I remember they had $20 million on the table guaranteed for him. And coaches were trying to convince him to take it. Security guy was trying to convince him to take it. Teammates were, they pulled out every stop. I had to fly to training camp to sit down with him to say, think about this. Who's the only person that makes money on this deal besides you? And he was like, you. I said, and why am I telling you don't take this deal? But the team that's writing you a check is telling you take this deal. And so the light bulb for him went off. Now, $20 million is a lot of money. I get it. It's a lot of risk to go through the season, but he was a first-round pick. He did have plenty of money saved, so he could take that risk. And when you weighed the risk versus reward for what he could potentially get, that was what we thought he should be getting, it was worth the risk. Fast forward a year later, and it was a $63 million guarantee instead of 20. It's a $43 million gamble that paid off. So it was a long process. It was a lot of back and forth. It was contract. We're done. We're not talking about it anymore. It's back on. We're not talking about it. It's on and off. Long, just a lot of analysis and conversations back and forth that ultimately worked out.
I love that your Rain Man brain recalls this situation and how it is interesting that that does apply to the situation. Because if I'm Dak, I'm nervous. Because right now, especially when you're looking at a potential coaching change, the possibility of getting tagged and what that means about my security. And, I know we've talked about his insurance policy and his endorsement deals. I'd be a little nervous. Like when I go into contract talks with NFL Network, I'm sort of always of the opinion, I don't know if NFL Network should hear this, but I'm like, I like the job security. Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever the deal is.
With Dak, I think that the idea of what you're hearing about how he's heading to attack, what that tells me is they don't expect anything to get done in the final month. Because if it doesn't get done in the final month, then he's open and they're going to want to tag him just so they can make sure they have control for negotiations. But I would wonder, and I don't know exactly if you were told this aspect of it or not, I would wonder if that's maybe Dak also just being like, this isn't going anywhere. We got it. 6-6. We got 4 games that we have to focus on, so we're not going to negotiate in this window.
It's not unlike him.
Because we're focused.
Yeah,
that honestly sounds like his perspective, where he's like, if somebody comes to him with a contract offer and he goes, I don't even want to see any offers right now. Let's just focus on it. We got to knock this. And that does sound like him. This is the guy who told Pam Oliver earlier in the season, or the way Pam Oliver relayed it in week 2, talking about that, he doesn't necessarily think he deserves X amount of dollars because that's reserved for guys for Super Bowl. He's got a very part of why he works so well here and why I think Jason Garrett loves him, why I think they fell in love with him in the pre-draft process. He is that right kind of guy. He's that cliche. He's got the mindset they want.
He's got such a healthy perspective. There really isn't. There's a confidence about Dak. There's never been an ego. And that's what I appreciate about him, because there are a lot of people out there that would look at the situation and say, look at everything I've done for you. Your quarterback went down. Your backup quarterback went down. And I took you to a 13-1 season my rookie year. I was picked in the 4th round. 13-3. And then when I look at what he's done, even with the Ezekiel Elliott suspension, and when I look at the way that he continues to galvanize his team at 6-6, and even last year before they picked up Amari Cooper, he didn't have a wide receiver. He didn't have a solid tight end. He was still getting stuff done. And so some people would look at this as a little disrespectful. Like, hey, I didn't hold out at camp. I showed up every day.
Yeah,
I haven't said one negative thing in the press. Stuff hasn't leaked from my camp. I'm trying to keep the focus on winning games. That to me, most people would get your mind's on your money. His mind has not been on the money this year. And I think that that's something that this team has to respect. I think it's something his teammates respect.
Or you can even look at it and talk about that's just an example of his confidence that he potentially is internally looking at that as, all right, I'll go out there and I'll play better, and this price tag is going to go up, and that he has that confidence to know I'm confident that I can play on my rookie deal right here because I know that I'm going to make exponentially more money having not done this deal in training camp. And he's a guy who's stepped out there and has proven it. And I mean, the example that I go to from the last game, and we were talking about it at the time, was, you know, typically on third and 10, you got a guy who's going to scramble and he's going to slide or something. Dak was short of the first down marker. It was crunch time for them. They didn't end up scoring, kind of made it irrelevant. But on third and 10, he's about 3 yards short, and he lowered his head and, you know, bowled over the defensive back to get that first.
That's why everyone was celebrating Josh Allen doing the very same thing in this game against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving. I'm like, we've been seeing that from Dak since he got here.
That felt like, in that moment, that felt like Dak trying to go, like, y'all need to, like, you need emotion here. So, like, it was, he wanted to lower the boom. And I remember the very next play was a pass to Randall Cobb, and he caught it. And, you know, they, come on, let's go. And then we have, you know, Michael Bennett afterwards screaming. Transitioning a little, I guess, looking at the emotion Dak was showing, what Randall Cobb showed, you got these veterans who are doing this. Do you think they sense there's a lack of intensity there right now? That they're needing those veterans feel, we got to light a spark under some of these guys, that there isn't that under them right now.
I don't know where it's coming from. I mean, we covered this on our last pod. I still think it's fascinating. The guy that's been here for a cup of coffee was so frustrated.
Loudly. You couldn't understand what he was saying. You just heard F word every other one and just.
Well, I'm glad the team's getting that. Look, here's the deal. This team believes that adversity, like Jerry Jones has told us, is an opportunity to rewrite a hell of a comeback story. I hope they listen to this podcast. I hope they listen to the local radio shows.
They do. They
I hope
all
they
listen.
To us. I hope, thank you, our numbers continue to grow.
Yeah,
so it's definitely the guys in the locker room, right?
Definitely the 53 in there.
I've got to hope that they take these newspapers and everyone mocking this idea that they can somehow turn the season around and go to the Super Bowl, and they use this as fuel. I hope that we're talking about something different as we get into January. I just keep going back to the 0-5 against winning teams. Their backs were against the wall against the Bills.
It felt like if there was a game they should have stepped up and been ready out of all of them, it felt like it should have been Buffalo and they weren't.
Yes.
And I think that's why we all anticipated something from Jerry, because it was like, okay, this should have been, you know, we've seen previously, you know, heading into the Philly game, there were all these questions about your coach and you guys answered them. Heading into Detroit, there was the Tavon Austin thing, and you guys came out and, you know, you busted your tails in that game and you won that. And it's like, okay, this is the first time all year.
And then you only lost. I keep going back to me, the ugliest loss of the season was you kept it within 4 points of the Patriots, and then the Patriots got beat the following week by the Houston Texans. So if you consider yourself to be a Super Bowl caliber team, you need to be as good as the Baltimore Ravens, as good as the Houston Texans. The Patriots are, you can penetrate that team this year.
Yeah.
They're penetrable.
Yeah, you.
Is that a word? Penetrable?
Yeah, because there's impenetrable. I think penetrable.
Penetrable.
Yeah, sure. We're going to say it is.
They proved that you can beat them, and they kept this within 4 points, and they didn't get it done.
Yeah, and I think that's the frustrating thing is that.
And then you're killing them because the Cowboys didn't work outside for that one. And then this week ahead of the Bears are outside working out. It's just so crazy.
Now, Buffalo, they got killed. Buffalo, that was beginning to end, manhandled
after
them
pretty much.
After
a fast start. It's so crazy.
So, but it is interesting that when you look at those winning teams they've lost to, they were within. That's the frustrating thing is that they could have won any of those other four, and they didn't. And that's where it's reflective on the coach. And I do want to bring up, because I know we already mentioned Ron Rivera. You guys have heard me on this podcast and on Twitter previously. Like, I think Chris Peterson makes a ton of sense.
Okay, so that's interesting that you say that, because we saw that he was stepping down.
He was.
At Washington. And
now that's a concern, because it's a step down. That makes me go, okay, is he freeing up time, or is he... He's literally just, he wants to step away. Because if he's wanting to step away, then he obviously is canceled.
So I reached out to people that were close to him as a coach and around the program, and I was told that it is, in fact, a recharge and reset.
I didn't hear that.
I don't know if that's...
I know you've got
your heart hung on him, but...
I do. That to me is just, that's...
It's an interesting wild card theory.
If it's not him, then I've got my new name. Because I trust Jane's reporting. I'm a believer in Jane Slater reports. So I'm going to say that Chris Peterson's out, and that's going to make me sad. So if Chris Peterson's out, then my new number one target is Jim Harbaugh. After everything. But see, then you've got people. I said something about Harbaugh.
Can you please explain that one to me?
I mean, Harbaugh is, I think, when you look at what he did at Stanford, what he did in San Francisco... what he did at San Diego, I think it was San Diego State where he was before that. But generally, where you look where he is, he's got the reputation as the guy who comes in, charges a team up for 3 years, and they're amped, and then it's just, okay, dude, your bit's wearing on us now. Like, you're really starting to grate on us. I think that's what the Cowboys need. I think they need the guy who can get this group charged up for 2 to 3 years.
What did he do at Michigan in his first 3 years?
Michigan's not been a great experience. We can just ignore that one as an outlier, and then we can look at the others. But, I mean, that's a guy who got you to three straight NFC championship games with the 49ers. That's a guy who is a good evaluator.
I'd love the milk-chugging, khaki-pant-wearing guy up on the podium every day. That would certainly be fun. But
you know the guy to ask. If the job comes up and we don't ask him now, that's obvious. You got to ask would be Jordan Lewis. Say, hey, what'd you think of Jim? One of Jim Harbaugh's assistants is on staff here. Greg Jackson, the safeties coach.
I'm telling you right now, it's feeling, and fans aren't going to want to hear this. As much as I've told you that this is as hot as Jerry's been, that it is inconceivable that he would continue to keep Jason around this team.
He is just your odds-on favorite, isn't
just
he?
Just buckle up, folks. I am not going to be surprised if Jason's still here.
You never gave me your answer then. Let's say Jason is fired. Let's not even consider that a possibility. What is the most likely, do you think? College coach, promote from within, retread NFL coach, or hotshot coordinator? Who's the most likely personality type they bring in?
Retread NFL coach.
So you think they'd go... let's just think of guys who are... You think... If Dan
I
Quinn
think Ron
fired,
Rivera would be interesting.
Rivera,
yes.
Okay, Rivera or some of the others, John Fox.
No.
Jack Del Rio.
No.
If Dan Quinn gets fired.
No.
No, not a fit. Mm-mm. But you think Rivera would make some sense?
I think he'd be interesting. I think he's a player's coach. I think it'd be interesting.
Lots of names to kick around. We'll have a lot of time to continue to kick those around. And, hopefully there's... Honestly, hopefully there's a win this week, because I don't think that I can stand hearing exactly how Jerry's going to spin it if they don't win. I don't know what creative way I'm going to be able to tolerate if they do lose.
Well, he's going to spin that. See, this is a team that can prove that it can go on a run, and it started with Chicago. So that's what we're going to be talking about. It's beginning to feel like Groundhog Day around here, though.
It is.
Yeah.
Joining us now to preview this game against the Chicago Bears is Patrick Finley. He covers the Bears for the Chicago Sun-Times. He's also the host of the Hallis Intrigue podcast, and you can find him on Twitter at Patrick Finley. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, sure thing.
So first question here, we see a lot of, grumbling about Jason Garrett here in Dallas. I know Matt Nagy was, a seeming deity there last year. It seems like he's coming under a little bit of fire now. Has the honeymoon wore off for Matt Nagy there?
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. I don't think he's disliked by any stretch, and certainly the Bears don't have an owner claiming that he will be a coach somewhere in the NFL next year. a little bit. Last year they went 12-4. Nagy kind of brought fun back. They started something called Club Dub in the locker room after the game, where they bring out a disco ball and the speaker system and dance, and he's throwing touchdown passes to tackles and stuff like that. There really hasn't been that level of joy this season, but I would say that, especially compared to some of the other Chicago coaches, I think his popularity is still pretty high.
What has happened? Why has the honeymoon and the luster and the shine worn off for those of us that have not kept a keen eye on Chicago and what they've been dealing with this season ahead of this game with the Cowboys?
The quarterback hasn't been very good. That's always a good place to start. Mitch Trubisky, they expected him to take a leap in his second year with Nagy, and he really hasn't. He's been more of a step back, honestly. Although he has looked better the last two or three weeks. They've been inconsistent in the run game. David Montgomery was their highest draft pick last year because they'd traded away a first and a second in previous deals, including for Khalil Mack. And he hasn't really gotten going the way that they had hoped he would. The offense just really hasn't found its identity. It's amazing. It's December. Matt Nagy is an offensive mind. They have all of these weapons, and we really don't know what they do best on offense yet. And if it's December and we're wondering, I'm thinking we will probably make it to January and still wonder the same thing.
The defense is still, one of the top units in the league. Is that really the only reason that the Bears are kind of still in any sort of contention, even as just the defense has carried them? And if they were getting anything close to above average production from the offense this year, this would be a top contending team in the NFC?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. You know, Mitch Trubisky said after they beat the Giants 2 weeks ago that 19 points wasn't good enough. They had just won the game 19-14. But, you know, had they at that time, had they scored 19 points in every game they played, I think they would have been 8-3. So 19 points actually would be good enough. It shows you how bad this offense has been, that they are where they are. Like you said, the defense has been really good. Khalil Mack is getting triple teamed, double teamed on every play. So his numbers aren't quite what he's used to having. But believe me, he has an impact on every single down. They lost Akeem Hicks to an injury and Danny Trevathan to an injury, actually the same one. They both dislocated their elbows. Hicks could come back next week, but you will not see him in that Cowboys game. Because of that, the defense has taken a little bit of a step back. But, you know, they're very, very good. They might not be dangerous the way they were last year when they led the league in takeaways, but they're still, you know, top five, top six in the league.
When you look at this Bears team, the Cowboys are 0-5 against winning teams. Is this going to be a situation where it could derail the Cowboys who are looking to reset here in the month of December? Or do you think that the Chicago Bears will rise to occasion on Thursday Night Football at Soldier Field?
I think we're looking at two teams that are really similar to each other. You know, since the end of September, I think both teams are 3-5. I think the three wins that each team has are all against garbage teams. I know that the Bears' three wins during that time have been against the Lions twice and the Giants once. So
way to sell this one for us.
Yeah. Tune in 7:25. Both of their pass rushes are great. You know, you could argue that Allen Robinson and Amari Cooper are two of the best doing it, or, you know, in that category, in that top tier right now. If the Bears would have won every game they were favored to win this season, they'd be, I think, 9-3. So the expectation has been there, and the Bears have let their fans down and themselves down more often than not. Could they derail the Cowboys? Absolutely. You know, they're at home. On a Thursday, the weather's going to be cold. I mean, it sets up okay for them. But, you know, with the Bears, we've been saying this, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, we can make a case for the Bears winning a lot of games this year, and they just haven't been able to do it. So, you know, they've lost to worse teams than the Cowboys. I'm not sure they've beaten a team quite as good as the Cowboys since the Vikings in week 4.
This literally is going to be that Spider-Man meme.
Yeah,
you know, the two teams looking at each other, because you could make the same argument. Now, on the weather, of course, the Cowboys did practice 3 days out here, and it's a balmy 60 degrees out. So they are ready for the low 40s that they can expect there in Chicago on Thursday night, Patrick.
Yeah,
you're just making me mad. You're making me mad saying that. I was going to say, the sun is shining right now, but it's somewhere in the high 30s, low 40s, and I'd cut off a couple of different body parts to get to 60.
Well, I got to wonder. So the last couple of weeks, the Cowboys have had issues blocking up front. Dak's been under some pressure. With the Bills, it was kind of just the straight four. With the Patriots, mm-hmm. it was their exotic blitzes and things like that. How would you expect the Bears to play this? Are the Bears a heavy blitzing team? Are they going to just be a team that tries to generate it with the defensive line? What do they generally have? How do they generally approach pressure?
They traditionally don't blitz a lot. They figure that with Khalil Mack, they might not have to. But Chuck Pagano has been more aggressive than Vic Fangio ever was. And you guys know this. I mean, what made Vic Fangio really good was masking coverage and rushing with four.
Yep.
Pagano likes to bring an inside linebacker or two. In fact, if you look at the last drive of the Thanksgiving game against the Cowboys or against the Lions, when the Lions were actually threatening, they were like at the 27 going in.
Mm-hmm.
On third down, they did a double mug blitz and brought two inside linebackers. And then on fourth down, they did the same thing. So that's not to say that they will do it regularly against the Cowboys, but it is in their arsenal. In general, I wouldn't expect too many exotics, you know, maybe a nickelback blitzing, you know, once or twice. But anytime you've got Khalil Mack, I don't think you need to put up too much window dressing.
So is this just like any other game for any other team in that it's going to come down to the quarterback? I mean, is this going to be as simple as if Mitch Trubisky shows up, the Bears got a good shot? If he doesn't, then it's going to be Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off his best game, which, you know, against the Lions might not be saying a whole heck of a lot. But, you know, this is a guy who a month ago was just absolutely lost in the woods. And, you know, the Bears still have legitimate questions about whether he's going to be their quarterback going forward beyond this season. You know, he's looking to build on this. He's a guy who confidence matters with him. And, you know, I wrote this earlier this week. This is really the first time all year that he's been able to draw confidence the old-fashioned way from actually having a really good game. and we'll see how that helps him. You know, can the Bears win without Mitch playing well? Maybe if they get a takeaway for a touchdown, something like that. But it would take a pretty extraordinary circumstance.
You find yourself in the unique position of being in Chicago, where you've covered a few coaching changes yourself up there, namely the recent one with John Fox going with the younger, sexier candidate and Matt Nagy. How hard is that to make that transition? And for the Cowboys fans out there that are calling for Jason Garrett's head, perhaps you can put in perspective, change doesn't always equate into success, perhaps.
It doesn't. And, you know, as a reporter, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way, you know, the day that somebody gets fired and their entire staff's got to leave and all of their kids have to, mm-hmm. you know, withdraw from school and go somewhere else and they've got to pack up their house and move is not a joyous day. And I've always had a problem with fans who celebrate it as though they've won something.
Yeah.
Because they most certainly haven't. And it's a sad day all around. You know, you said it, you know, just because you're making a change doesn't guarantee improvement. You know, I was here for Mark Trestman. You know, he got fired after a second season that was completely out of control. You know, Brandon Marshall was saying and doing stuff and Martellus Bennett, and it was a mess. And so they brought in John Fox trying to fix that specific problem, which was to kind of put together a more professional locker room. And they did that. But then Fox's teams didn't score very well. So then they switched the offensive guy. And, you know, it's Murphy's Law. It's the guy you hire is going to be 180 degrees different than the guy you had. And I think, you know, we've seen the Bears do that twice, where they went from an offensive guy to a defensive guy and back to an offensive guy. It doesn't guarantee success by any stretch. But I do think that there is a feeling in the building when you know it's inevitable, that is a very strange place to play or to be. And to me, what's so interesting about the Cowboys is, you know, this coaching change is a possibility. But shoot, they're winning their division and could make the playoffs too. I don't know how many teams on the planet have that sort of duality going on at the exact same time.
That's why I keep telling people it is a possibility. I just refuse to count Jason Garrett out next year, having covered this team as long as I have. So
you can't do it. But Patrick Finley does great work for the Chicago Sun-Times covering the Bears. You can check him out on Twitter at Patrick Finley. Thanks so much, Patrick. We really appreciate your insight.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we played that quote for you earlier today where Dak Prescott said talk is cheap. And, you know, you can see what a great leader Dak Prescott is, because all of his teammates really took talk is cheap to heart. And, you know, we like to bring you locker room audio often. There just really wasn't anybody talking today. And it's a Tuesday, but it's a Friday for them. And that's always a little scant. But there was really nobody wanting to chat with us today.
Well, you've got to let the play on the field do the talking. And, you know, the reason why I continue to say that there is a fighting chance for this team, it's the guy that we're talking about, a potential franchise tag, Dak Prescott, the guy who's done everything that you've possibly wanted him to do. I believe this team goes as he goes, and he seems as confident as I've seen him with his back against the wall. So we'll see what these Cowboys do on Thursday. And like I said, what a weird couple of weeks it's been around the Star in Frisco.
It has indeed. And we will actually talk to you one more time again before Thursday. We'll actually have a good preview episode for you that we'll release on Thursday as well. So you get us on back-to-back days this week.
It's going to be exciting. And we've got Thursday date night at Olive Garden. He always gets me breadsticks.